three members present, that is a quorum. I will call us to order and invite those who choose to join us in the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Good evening, Happy New Year. Welcome to the January 7th, 2013 planning meeting of the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors. We have a short but meaty agenda this evening. Starting with a couple of reminders for everyone. Is that me? I'm checking to see who else's mic is on. Must be. Pipe down over there, Mr. O'Malley, please. A couple of reminders about travel policies and procedures. I believe on your desk, the clerk was kind enough to place the notice for the Wisconsin Counties Association legislative exchange that's coming up in early February. You should also have on your desk the purple paper that has the travel policy summary, which we all received back in April, but that was a while ago, so I'm just reminding folks. Oh, I'm sorry. The registration form for the legislative exchange is up front here if you need a copy. I'm assuming everybody got it in the mail to their home address. Is that right? I would appreciate not. Yes. Okay. So just a reminder that this summary of travel policies applies to county board supervisors. It applies to all employees of La Crosse County. I have had the chance to have a couple of conversations with folks in the past couple of months about some travel opportunities to conferences, and some of these have come as a surprise to some people, so I thought it would be helpful to hand out another copy and remind folks that these are the policies and procedures for all of us. I know that there are some people who don't agree with these policies and procedures, and we can always make changes, but these are in the ordinance for all of us to follow, and unless those get changed, these are the policies that we are following. So part of my responsibility as the chair is to sign off on travel requests and things like accommodations and so forth, and these are the guidelines that I use in making decisions about providing that approval. So for example, the legislative exchange that's coming up in February 5th and 6th, I think. Is that right? 5th and 6th, down in Madison. You may note that on the conference registration form, there is a deadline of January 21st. That's the deadline for WCA, for Wisconsin Counties Association. We need to have an internal deadline so that we can complete check requisitions and make hotel reservations and so forth. So I will send this out in an email also, but I'm making sure that everyone here tonight knows that if you intend to attend the legislative exchange, the deadline for signing up to do that internally is a week from today, which is January 14th. So January 14th is when you need to get the paperwork in, which is that registration form and the travel request form, into the clerk's office by a week from today, so that we can process those checks and make sure that we meet that January 21st deadline and not incur additional expenses. I'm stopping right now to take a breath because there are a couple questions. Supervisor Schrader.
You said that the clerk has a sign-up sheet there. We can sign up.
Is your microphone on? Because now we're having a hard time hearing you.
It is.
There. Huh. Eating microphones again tonight, I guess, sir.
So that means we can sign up with Madam Clerk rather than send in what we received at home?
Correct. You should complete that registration form and the travel request form and together submit those to the clerk's office for processing by the January 14th deadline. So fill out both of those forms and get them to the clerk's office.
Thank you.
Sure. Supervisor Friedland.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I I think that part of the reason that this is on our desks is because there were some questions that came up about this lodging issue, about sharing rooms. And I wanted to say that while I am happy to share meals and go out drinking with anybody on the county board, sleeping with them is not something that I am so inclined and willing to do. And that I think we're all professionals here. We're diverse. We represent different interests. We come from different places. We're not necessarily employees of a department all at an event for the same reason. And there are reasons for us to be keeping each other at arm's length, both literally and figuratively. And I don't want to know how other people in this room necessarily take drugs or what they sleep in. And I don't want to share a room with people. And as far as the idea, well, then you have to pay more money, you have to pay the difference. I don't know why I should be the one to pay the difference rather than the other person paying the difference. And I think that we need to revisit this particular policy, because there's also the ethical reason of if I'm sharing a room with somebody and I do to them what I do to my husband when he snores, then there's going to be big trouble.
There are jails in Dane County as well, I think.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. So, you know, well, I don't know where you revisit this policy.
Well, I appreciate your adding levity to the meeting. I think we've stretched this discussion a little bit beyond maybe travel policy, but I will take that as an indication from you, Supervisor Friedland, that you are planning to offer some amendment to the ordinance as it currently reads.
Well,
and I'm sure that Corporation Counsel can help you in finding those exact places, but it is very clear that the ordinance applies to travel procedures and practices for all county employees, including county board supervisors. That's the way it reads right now. So it would take a change in the ordinance to make the change that you are proposing. And that is definitely something that can be taken up. It would start with executive committee. And so I would encourage anybody else. It sounds to me like that's something that Supervisor Friedland is interested in working on. So maybe others who have ideas or thoughts about that ordinance could help Supervisor Friedland, and know that that will be coming through. We're all kind of on notice now that will be coming through executive committee, I'm guessing, in the coming months. Until that changes, these are the policies. Thank you. Other questions or comments? Supervisor Paff.
Thank you. When the attorney is looking at these policies, I think he should also look into the legality of it all. If you're not opening the county up for possible lawsuits in case strange things do happen with rooming, this actually is no joke, because I know of an instance involving the REA out of another state where this did happen. But I think La Crosse County should be aware of things like that when they have a policy like this, when they are making it mandatory, so to speak, with people sharing rooms.
Okay, Dave, did you get that, Mr. Lang?
And you just check that out, Mr. Lang, and see if there is anything that I say is true.
That'd be a full-time job. So just for clarification, these rules are in effect until and unless there's a change in the ordinance, and they especially apply to the legislative exchange, the deadline for which is a week from today. So I just want to make sure, we have seriously had some miscommunications. We've been a little lax about this, so I am starting off the new year tightening up on these policies, and a reminder that that deadline is Monday the 14th for the legislative exchange. Later on in the agenda, we'll hear from the representative from Wisconsin Counties Association, who I'm sure will pitch that event and make more people want to sign up for that. Supervisor Burns.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So if this policy is correct, then if a member of the management team were to go on travel, they would have to share a room with somebody else. Is that correct?
The county will pay for a double occupancy room. If they choose to have their own room, they would pay out of personal funds the difference. Actually, if there's somebody else of the same gender that is attending that is available to share a room. Anything else on the travel policy and procedures? Supervisor Meyer.
Not necessarily on the travel procedures, but there's a lot of documents that come out undated. Not just this, but I've gone through my file at home and I found a lot of things similar, and I don't know what the date is on it. So just
good point.
Below
yep,
it, put 1/7/13, and you got it.
Yep, this. Thank you for that reminder. That's very helpful. Supervisor Richmond.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It does say in lodging, bullet point three, traveling together must share a room whenever feasible. Explain feasible. I mean, if you got a cold, you can split up.
Snoring included.
Snoring, I mean, you can expand on feasible.
I don't know for sure, but I think in some cases there might be multiple hotels that need to be used for an event like WCA, the state conference, where if there are two females going and there's not, or whatever number of people are going and it has to be split between two hotels, that might be an example. I really don't know. But that, I think the point is that the policy says the county taxpayer funds will be used for double occupancy rooms. If you want something other than that, pay the difference.
Okay.
I don't have a great definition of feasible. I'm sorry.
That's fine. I understand that. But you had said now you're going to tighten up the policy. So up until this point, you have been letting things go by with.
I have not. I believe that there are others who have been in this position where I believe that there has been a difference in the interpretation in the past 10 years.
Oh, but
this is not a change for me.
Okay.
I have been enforcing it, and it has caused some rancor amongst this group, and I'm just making sure that everybody hears the same message from me tonight. Anything else on the travel policy now that I've done my Dale Carnegie bit for the night? If not, are there supervisor conference reports or announcements to be made? Supervisor Cruz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to talk a little bit about a Fraxan Mining Summit that the Health and Human Services Board hosted in November. We had invited, well, as you know, the Fraxan Mining boom has created some economic opportunities, but it's also created some challenges in terms of health and infrastructure and so forth.
Supervisor Cruz, are you on your microphone?
I am.
It's very hard to hear tonight.
Are you not hearing me? Okay. Okay. Better?
Thank you. That's better.
Okay. I'll shout. Anyway, so we had invited Secretary Dennis Smith of the Department of Health Services to come speak to us in regard to frac sand mining challenges. He was not able to come, but he sent a representative from his department, and we also had the Bureau Director of the Environmental and Occupational Health Department here, as well as a representative from Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. So those three people were a panel that responded to questions from our Human Services Board. And we also had a number of county board members from other counties here, including Iowa and Minnesota. It was a very well-attended meeting. 15 people participated electronically. So I think we had a really good cross-section of Health and Human Services people. What we heard was a little bit disquieting, worrisome. For example, we were told that resources are not available at the state level to conduct harmful level of crystalline silica research. There's some work being done to evaluate the public health implications, but because there have been no funds allocated for any of this stuff, we really don't need to expect very much from the state in terms of figuring out whether silica sand is harmful to people. There are no regulatory standards for a presumed unsafe level of exposure, even if monitoring were done. State officials believe that the current air pollutant regulations are sufficient to protect the public on the one hand, but on the other hand, they tell us that they do not recommend air monitoring equipment be set in place at sand mines because there are no regulatory standards against which action could be taken if detection were identified. So there really, you know, are no safeguards in place at this point that, you know, coming from the state. The state officials indicated that they felt that any of this monitoring would best be done by the industry itself because they, you know, they abide by best practices and they obviously have our interest at heart. There are approximately 60 mines that have permits in Wisconsin, and most of those mines have received waivers for monitoring. So hardly any mines are actually monitoring at this time. And the state officials were fairly unanimous that monitoring is not an effective method for identifying contaminants, and that therefore they don't want to, you know, allocate any resources to that. Also, the DNR representative told us that the DNR has seen a 60% cut in personnel and that there is no way that they could possibly, you know, come out and check on sand mines. They will respond to complaints of dust emissions, but the capacity to respond quickly is limited, and it may be the case that an emission occurs but it not be observed by officials when they arrive at the site because of wind velocity has changed, mining has stopped, or the roads have been watered by the mining company. So I think what the message we got from this meeting was that counties really need to be vigilant and set up their own monitoring, set up their own zoning, set up their own conditional use permits in order to keep a handle on these mines, unless they're willing to let the mining companies basically run the show. Thank you.
Thank you, Supervisor Cruz, and thank you for your leadership on setting up that session. I know that it was very helpful to everyone who attended.
I want to add one thing. I'm sorry. Doug Moorman did a wonderful job of organizing this and setting it up, and he really deserves a huge amount of credit for really pulling this off.
Thanks to him as well. Thank you. Other conference reports or announcements? Oh, go ahead, Supervisor Pedretti.
Not really an announcement, more of a change. The slip that y'all have on the calendar upcoming, the PR&D tours are at 4 p.m., and I did send Terry another email on this. We'll get her yet, but it's 4 p.m., not 8 in the morning.
For the last entry in February, both January and February. Okay, so those should read 4 o'clock instead of 8 o'clock. January 29th is 4 p.m. and February 26th PR&D tour is 4 p.m. Marilyn's up that early, but nobody else is. I have two quick announcements of my own. There's a clipboard, a sign-up sheet coming around, please, with the help of someone up here, to indicate if you are interested in receiving the WCA magazine, monthly magazine. So if you would pass that around to supervisors and indicate whether or not you want to receive a copy of that, then we can submit the subscription in the right amount. And secondly, there are a couple of vacancies on the Board of Adjustment, a vacancy on the Board of Adjustment. Notice went out to towns. The person who serves on the Board of Adjustment needs to live within a township, and we sent that notice out to township boards, but if you know of anyone who might be interested, if you would forward that name to me, I would appreciate it, as well as there are a couple of vacancies on the Winding Rivers Library Board. These are kind of off-cycle appointments, so out of their normal schedule. The Winding Rivers folks, one needs to live within the city of La Crosse, and one can live anywhere in the county. Supervisor Schrader, you had a question?
Thank you. Can the county board supervisor be on the Board of Adjustment?
If they live in a township.
They can.
Theoretically, they can. Supervisor Burke.
Who is leaving the Board of Adjustment?
Mark Huseman moved. So he is the person, that's the vacancy that was created. Supervisor Schrader.
That Board of Adjustment normally meets on one of our meeting nights, doesn't it?
Not always. I think they meet on the, I don't remember. I'll have to check and let you know. Unless somebody has a green book, I think it says in the green book. If anybody has a green book with them. I'll get an answer to you, Supervisor Schrader. Sorry about that. All right. With that, I will send it over to you, Mr. O'Malley.
Thank you. Members of the board, just a couple of quick items on the calendar just to point out while I've got a minute back to Marilyn's point. A couple of items. Martin Luther King Day, you also have a specific invite on your desk, a great community event. La Crosse County, as you may know, is one of the co-sponsors with other organizations. Maureen Friedland and I both serve on the planning committee. Maureen makes more meetings than I do and does more work on putting that event together. It's a great event. Viterbo College is stepping up and really being a great sponsor this year with an outside speaker and singers, and it's going to be a great event this year. So if you have a chance to meet it, it's countywide. I'll be sending out some more notices to other local officials as well, so please make a note of that. It's a great event and a chance to meet a lot of people from across our community. Also a couple items that didn't make it on the calendar because they are special meetings. We were just meeting with Public Works just recently this evening. There will be a special meeting of Public Works alone at 4:30 just before our county board meeting next Thursday the 17th to finalize some of the property acquisition items that will be in closed session. And then at 5 o'clock will be a special joint meeting of Public Works and Exec. It's on an item that I can't go into a lot right now. It's a legal matter that on a contract item that reports to Public Works. So hopefully Exec Committee and Public Works Committee can make a special meeting at 5 o'clock. You'll get a notice on this, but I just thought I'd take a moment. It's a difficult legal matter that I need to bring the Executive Committee and the Public Works Committee up to speed on. In addition to that, you'll recall that our December 20th county board meeting was canceled. We'll be carrying over and we'll include in your packet our annual highlights of comparisons with other counties, tax base, property tax bills. So we didn't forget that. It was going to be December 20th, but you'll get an additional item in your county board packet for next meeting that you'll have a little bit more time to review than you usually do, but it's a lot of good information. And that is delaying completing the 2013 budget summary. So you'll still be getting all the same information, but it will insert that property tax comparison we do with other counties and within your jurisdictions. So again, we'll walk through that at your meeting of the 17th. So just wanted to highlight a couple of those items before we go to your regular agenda. Any questions on any of those? If you do, just let me know, but you'll get notices on each of those if you're on those committees that I just mentioned. The next item I have is a proclamation, January 2013, Highway Safety Transportation Month, where staff works so diligently to build safe roads for the residents of La Crosse County and visitors to travel upon. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the La Crosse County Board does hereby proclaim the month of January 2013 as La Crosse County Highway Safety Month and urges all residents to join in recognizing the valuable contribution of persons dedicated to ensuring safe roads for La Crosse County residents and visitors. And I will note with this reading that our Highway Commissioner is here attending and making sure that he and his staff do a great job keeping our roads open and safe.
It moved by Supervisor Meyer, seconded by Supervisor Becker to approve that proclamation. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That proclamation is approved unanimously. Back to you, Mr. O'Malley.
Madam Chair, members of the board, we have two very informative items that are on your agenda this evening, obviously that are listed and you've noticed. Our Wisconsin County's legislative update, and we have John Hockmer here, who's the legislative director from WCA, and batting and cleanup after that will be a report on, for the first time during my tenure that we've had a report on our airport and its local economic impact. So we've got two very informative items. So without any further ado, I'll ask John to come forward and do our presentation on WCA. And you do have the actual PowerPoints, I believe, on your desk. So
I did let Mr. John Hokumer know that we were the kind of county board that would actually still listen to what he said and pay attention, even though we had the papers in front of us. He said sometimes when they get them ahead of time, then they don't pay attention. I said we were not that kind of group at all. So.
And that was very good to hear. I appreciate that. But it might be helpful if you do want to take notes that you know up front that you do have the presentation. Well, first of all, thank you for having me this evening, Steve. Thank you for the introduction, and thank you for the great things that you do for us. And you've always been a great supporter of WCA, and we certainly look for your advice and your suggestions all the time. And Chairperson Johnson, thank you for inviting me as well. It was a pleasure to be here. As I mentioned earlier to you, that I believe very strongly that as WCA staff, we need to get out to our membership. And the first time I worked for WCA, I was on the county board in Manitowoc for four terms and served one term as chair and administrative coordinator back in the 80s and early 90s. And then I left in November of 1991 to go work for WCA, and I lobbied for them for about 2 years. And then the state senate approached me, and I was a sergeant-at-arms for the state senate until September of 2002. I then came back to WCA, and until last February, I oversaw the insurance companies for WCA. But I was a lobbyist on the insurance issues, but otherwise I really didn't get into the legislative realm unless there was something that, because of the contacts that I had at the Capitol, was extremely important that I get involved. But last February, we had the opportunity when our legislative director left. He actually left between Christmas and New Year's a year ago. And I made the offer to Mark O'Connell that I would step in and slide over into the legislative director's role. But I've always felt very strongly that it was important for us to get out to the counties who are our members. And there's a lot of people that don't serve on our board of directors or don't serve on our steering committees, don't come to the conference, don't come to the educational seminars, and unless they hear from us and see us, they don't know what we do for you. And I think that that's extremely important. I'm also, since I moved from Manitowoc, where I had a dairy and beef operation, I moved from there to Verona, which is just south and west of Madison. I was so bored because I didn't have enough to do, so I ran for the city council and served as council president finance chair from 97 to 06 and mayor since 06. So I serve in that elected role as well, and again, I think it's important that I see what the League of Municipalities does for us, and I think that, you know, that helps me in doing the job. As I mentioned to Chairperson Johnson prior to the meeting, by the end of this month, in a 2.5-month period, I will have been to over a third of the counties in the state, and that to me is, I think, extremely important. It has nothing to do about me, but it has to do what we as an association can do for county government. And now more than ever, I think it's important that not only our county officials and the people that work for the county, but the taxpayers and the state legislature know what county government is about. Because I can tell you that of all levels of government, people know the least about county government than city, village, or town government. And nothing against any of those other levels. They're great. But I've worked in all of them. I worked for a while in town government as well. To me, there is nothing like county government. But in order for county government to be important and recognized for the value that it is, we need to explain what we do, not only to the taxpayers, but also to the legislature. So with that, I was thinking about what am I going to go talk to when I go to these counties. And it's not just me. We have other people on our staff that can do it as well. And the thing that I kept hearing over and over is about the partnership that we have, the state and the counties with the state. And I kept thinking, is it really a partnership? Is it a partnership that we saw 20 years ago, 25 years ago? And I thought, no, it's not. So we need to explain that, again, to our membership, but also to the state. So tonight we're going to talk about a couple things. We're going to talk about local county finance, state finance, how some of the state budget priorities have changed over time, how state budget decisions affect what we do at the local government, a little bit what we know of already about the 2013-15 state budget, and what can we expect. Oops, I think I hit that too fast. Could you possibly go back to that one? And we think that this is important because sometimes we'll hear, and we're compared to other states as far as what local government spends, but it's very important to know that in the state of Wisconsin, we're very unique, what we do, county government, what we do for the state. There's only 7 states that provide a higher share of local government revenues than Wisconsin. But local government here does more than 55% of the state and local spending, and that's a percentage higher than all but 15 of the states in the United States. And that's mainly because of what we do in our highway departments and in a lot of the human services and social services programs where we are the arm of the state. And again, and what I have on the bottom here is that tax and spending decisions made at the state level significantly impact county finances, and we're going to talk about that as we go through. So a little bit on local finance review, and compare this slide with the next slide. And keep in mind that this slide that you're looking at now is a statewide average. It's all 72 counties, and some of those counties, the majority of them, have the county sales tax option. Some do, some don't. Some get more in federal aid than others because of their forestry programs and so forth. So you're not really comparing apples to apples, but it still gives you a good indication. And one of the key things I think here is that all 72 counties on an average, that 25.4% of their funding comes from the state. Now, on the next slide, when you look at La Crosse County, and Mr. O'Malley certainly knows your budget a lot better than I do, but when you compare that your local taxes are higher here than what they were on the prior on the 72 county, that doesn't mean that that's a bad thing. That does mean one of the things, just looking through the slides, and I'd have to ask Steve, is when I look through the slides, one of the things that comes to mind for me is that you have a much lower debt ratio than a lot of the other counties do to their overall spending. So the county must believe strongly that you're paying for more things as you go along rather than funding them through debt.
The other main difference is that the percentage of taxes, we get a larger percentage of sales tax per capita than many of the other counties. So we're able to support more of it from, and that's included in that 40%. So
correct.
Our per capita tax levy is actually less, and we provide that statistical comparison to the board. But as a percentage of the total, we get a higher level of sales tax
correct.
Than other counties because we're a regional center.
Correct, and that's one of the other slides will point that a little about too. But this, it does give you somewhat of an idea how La Crosse County compares. But I didn't want anybody to think that because you're funding your budgets at 40% through the taxes that's higher than others, that's not necessarily a bad thing. You got to look at all the different factors that are involved. On this slide, the main thing that I wanted to point out to here, and I'll go over to the last two columns because really, it's comparing 2000 or 2005 to 2000, and then 5 years later, 2010 to 2005. But if you look at the very last column, what we want to point out here is if you look at you can see what the property taxes were over that 5-year average. They were 4.7. You can see the federal aids, and then you can see what we got from the state. That's the only negative number. So our property taxes are going up, not all that bad, I would suggest. Not all that bad, but we're getting less money from the state. But the other bothersome thing to me is that if you look at other financing way on the bottom, that's mainly debt. So we've seen a lot of counties and a lot of other local units of government have to borrow money for some of their operating costs where in the past they have levied for them. And you can't continue to do that year after year after year. Here again, La Crosse County, how do your revenues compare? And as Mr. O'Malley mentioned, when you take a look at your sales tax compared to what the other states were, other counties were, I should say, you can see over that 5-year average, you have a 1.1% increase where statewide it has gone down. Your equalized values have gone up as well. Property taxes, you're very similar to what the statewide average was over the 5 years. But again, there's a lot of factors that go into that, and I'm sure that Mr. O'Malley would be happy to discuss that with you at any time if you had any questions. So statewide expenditures, and you'll see here again where again, this is the 72-county average. And I think one of the main things, again, on this slide or the next slide is when you compare La Crosse County to the 72-county average, you have less debt service than the average county. The fact that your public safety expenditure, that percentage is higher, that doesn't necessarily come to me as a negative thing either. It tells me that you're funding the majority of those things through the tax levy, and you're not borrowing for them. And it makes a difference what your total levy is. Again, there's so many factors, but we wanted to give you some sort of a comparison. This is statewide expenditures. I'll have to follow along here, too. And again, it talks about the you can see where the debt service is. Again, I think is one of the important things to point out here to people. You can see that in the 2005 to 2010 time period that we're now at 10.2% of the expenditures are debt service. And if we continue to do that, we get ourselves in the same trouble that the state did and our federal government did. So it's something we certainly need to keep an eye on. And again, as I stated, La Crosse County is very low on the debt service side of things. A little bit about state finance overview. This slide, I think, is extremely important because when you look at, we know that there's been a lot of discussion. The governor has indicated that he is supporting an income tax cut. Now Speaker Voss has said that he wants to see an income tax cut. There's been a legislative study committee. They're all talking about that there will be a state income tax cut. One of the main things we want to point out here is that when they take a look at their total revenues that the state has, if 51.9% of the total revenues of the state is from the income tax, then they really need to make decisions, very smart decisions, which personally I wouldn't do the state income tax cut, not in the situation that the state is in. But if they're going to, they better really think about what they do with the state income tax cut because it's 51.9% of their total revenue. Before, and then you can see sales tax a second. And then I always ask everybody on this page, anyone know what the excise tax is, 5.6% of the total state budget? Any idea? Almost 100% of that is cigarette tax. 5.6% of the total state revenue. The next slide, and again, I'll just look at the very right-hand columns because the other ones are just estimates from different times. The thing to point out here is that on the very bottom right-hand side, $126.6 million is where the state ended up as a surplus at the end of the past fiscal year. And again, of that $126.6 million, $76.8 million of that was in the individual income tax. And you can see where the rest comes from. But again, we have to make the point it's extremely important if they're going to do something with the individual income tax that they be very careful with what they do. A little bit on the transportation side, you can see the percentage increase in dollars. And especially in the last years, there's no way that the increase in transportation funding is keeping up with the rate of inflation. I drive the state a lot, and I can tell you that our infrastructure in the state is definitely deteriorating. And for those people that they're for economic development and job growth, if we don't have the infrastructure, we're not going to see the job growth or economic development either. So transportation has to be an extremely important part of what we do with the state budget. And we'll talk a little bit more about that in just a bit here. I think that these two pie charts and on the next page tell another strong story for us in local government and one that our legislators and the governor needs to hear. If you look at the four charts, and it goes back to 1989, 1991, the state operations over that time period has been between 24 and 26%. It's been pretty stable for state operations. Aids to local education, back in 1989, we were at 28% of the total. Then it went up to 42% because if you remember in the mid 90s, they went to the two-thirds funding of education, and since then, they've been dropping off on that again. They went from 28 to 42, then to 42, and now they're down at 35%. But if you take a look at where most of the money came, the percentage of the money came, we started out in local government, cities, towns, villages, counties, at 27% of the total pie in 89-91. We went from 27 to 17 to 15 to 15. One of the points I try and make here is that, you know, sometimes people at the Capitol think that we're only complaining about what happened last year. This isn't only the last 2 years. It's what happened as far as our funding for county programs. So I think that this is important information that they see, that over the years, that it's been going on. This is a trend that's been going on for a long time.
Tara?
Can I just ask real quickly, what is AIDS to individuals and organizations? What is that comprised of?
You know, I used to know exactly what that was, but it can be for, I believe that that's...
Direct payments to individuals.
It's direct payments, yes, to individuals for the most part.
Is that like Badger Care?
Badger Care,
Medicare. Yeah.
Food Share. Because that does none. I'm sorry. None of those items go through a county budget. They're actually a state appropriation that pays for those programs. So you wouldn't see that in state operations. You also wouldn't see that in the county budget, which is like Food Share to an individual. We administer on behalf of the state, but it doesn't go through our budget.
Okay.
Thank you, Steve. Looking at these slides, when you take a look at state budget priorities by program. And we didn't pick out all the programs. We just picked out these four programs. For the UW system, over that time period, 1999 and then 2011, 39% and 39%. But if you look, again, where the cuts are, it's in shared revenue. 10.2% in 1999. We're down to 6.4% in 2011. This next slide just shows what we've had as far as shared revenues from the state. Now, this does not include utility tax payments. That's a separate calculation. This is strictly the shared revenue portion. And we were at, going back to 2007, 0.00 minus 3.50. And then last year's when we took the 19.2% cut. State budgets also affect local finance decisions. This is a slide, and it's impacted. It does impact, or very soon will impact, La Crosse County. This is one of the top priorities for WCA, and we're working extremely hard on this one. And what we've told the state is there's no other level of government in the state of Wisconsin that has two different controls on them, where you have a tax levy cap and you also have the tax rate cap. And Steve, correct me if I'm wrong here, but it's my understanding that with the timing of this is because you're capped at the 1992 rate at what the levy was, and that was about the same time that the county did the state or the county option sales tax. So you implemented that, your levy went down, your tax rate went down, and now you're capped at that lower rate. So the timing for with all this happening was one of the worst things, and it certainly impacted La Crosse County a lot. And again, we're working very hard, working with the legislature, working with DNR, our DOR, Department of Revenue. There is just absolutely no reason why there should be two different caps for county government. No other unit of government has that. And if you look at the next page, you can see that as far as tax rates statewide, I believe it's La Crosse County is 14th lowest on the tax rate. So we will work. We're gonna see if we can get that done for you. Well, at the same time that we're getting less money from the state, you can see on the next page what the state has done to us as far as caps. 2007, 2008, we were at 3.86. Then we were at 2. Then we were at 3 and 3 for the next 2 years. And then effective with the last budget, the last session, we were at 0% and 0%. This next slide shows, and again, we're not picking on other local units of government here, but if you take a look at the county column and you compare that to the other local units of government, and again, this is statewide, counties have done a very, very, very good job as far as their increase. And I know recently the Taxpayers Alliance came out and said that of all levels of government, local units of government, that counties had the lowest tax rates in the state on an average basis. So with the exception of, I believe it was in 2010, we were tied with the municipalities at 3.2%. And then last year, the schools were at a minus 1%, where we were at a plus 1.1%, but we came in second there. So counties on their own really have done a very good job of limiting their tax increases. Now on this page, this is, you know, just some of the things that happened last year with property tax changes. And the only one that I'll really talk about here is the second bullet point, which is another one that we're explaining to the legislature and to the administration. This one just absolutely does not make any sense when you think about it. If the counties had the flexibility, maybe in 2013 and 2014, La Crosse County there's not a reason to levy to the max, but maybe in 2015 there is. And if you could go back and take some of that levy from prior years and you had that flexibility, that would make a lot of sense. If you don't have that flexibility, what it actually could encourage counties to do or local units of government to do is to levy to the maximum every year. And I think that that's just sending a really bad message to local units of government. If they want to cut the funding from us, they ought to give us some flexibility that we can make good, smart decisions at the local level. So we're going to try to change that if we can. And then, again, in the bottom, you can see that the county property tax controls tightened at the same time that the county shared revenue was reduced by 19%. So let's talk a little bit about the 2013-2015 budget. Really, the only thing on this timeline that we're waiting for now is probably around mid-February, probably the second week of February or so, the governor will release his budget. And we will immediately analyze that budget and get information to you as quick as we possibly can. This is a page or a quote that Kyle found, the second bullet point. Some people might argue that the cuts on local aid payments were more than local governments could handle, that it pushed the problem down to them, said Rob Reinhart. Rob works for the Legislative Fiscal Bureau. But there is no question about that the budget decisions had a very large impact in balancing the state structural deficit. So now when we hear from the state that there is a surplus, maybe it's not a lot of surplus, that there is a surplus, and we hear that, well, they'd like to put more money into funding education, they'd like to possibly give some money to state employees that have been cut or haven't had increases for a long time. Those are good things, we don't argue that, but we were part of the solution to fix the state budget problem, and they should not forget about us when they're looking at their budget. So we need to keep reminding them that if there is this partnership, we had significant cuts, and now if they're finding some dollars available, they ought to work with us to restore and renew that partnership. This slide just talks a little bit about the structural deficit, and I'll start from the very bottom. We can go back to 1997, 1999. We can blame Democrats, we can blame Republicans. They were both certainly to blame. If you look at the very, on the bottom, the very right-hand column, 1.532, that number, that's billions. The state of Wisconsin was, in 1997-1999, $1.5 billion in the red at the end of that biennium. And you can see that we went to as high as nearly $2.9 billion in the red. Whether you like or you dislike what happened in the last 2 years, the state now does have a budget surplus of $126 or $125 million at the end of the year. So there is no deficit. They're starting new. They're starting fresh. They need to talk about what they're going to do for us in local government. So what can we expect? Revenue projections, these are fairly recent. They're looking at, in fiscal year 14, 3.8% increase. Fiscal year 15, 3.5% increase. That would be a total biennial growth of $1.52 billion. Now, that's important. So basically, they have a balanced budget from the prior budget. With new growth, that would be $1.52 billion over the two-year period, that they would have additional dollars that they could spend. But, and we know what just happened, or some of the things that happened in the fiscal cliff situation, and one of the things that they did is the return of the estate tax, there's about a $200 million credit that comes to the state of Wisconsin. Now that the estate tax is not returning, that means that $1.52 billion is actually $1.3 billion. So we already lost $200 million right there. On the bottom, when you see that all state agencies submitted their budget requests in September, and in fiscal year 14, they had a 3.6% increase overall on the general purpose revenue spending. In 2015, it was 3.5%. If the agency requests were fully funded, they would need not only the $1.3 billion, they would need another $390.4 million on top of that just to fund what they were going to do on the state programs. Now, all of us know that that's not going to happen. Those agency requests won't be fully funded, but that's where they'd be at. So let's talk a little bit about this proposed income tax cut. And I mentioned the governor has spoken about it. Speaker Voss has spoken about it. There's been a study committee on it. The next page, I think this is really where the rubber hits the road. If they reduce the state income taxes, individual income taxes, by 10%, that would mean we'd be another $715 million short of what the state would need to balance the budget. If we took the individual income tax and we reduced it from our current 12th to 20th in the country, they would need $966 million more than what they're anticipating in new revenue. If they were to reduce the Wisconsin income tax burden to the national average, they would need an additional $1.9 billion. Now, it's not what I've been telling the counties. It's not if this individual income tax cut happens, it's when it happens and how they're going to implement it. And we don't know the answers to that. But knowing legislators, they want to impact as many people as they possibly can. So when you look on the top of this chart and you see this area up here, the lower the number means the higher the rank that we are nationally. And this information comes from back in 2008. You can see there's a source noted at the bottom. It still hasn't really change, but this is the latest information that we have regarding of where we rank. So you can bet that the majority of the people that are going to be impacted are the people up here. And one of the numbers that I'm hearing on the top end is the people that are up to the $200,000 range is where they're going to be impacted. Let's talk just a little bit about transport. Oops, could you go back one slide there for me? I'm sorry. New transportation funding, and you know that we took some big cuts in transportation in the last 2 years. In the legislation last year, they created the Transportation Finance and Policy Commission. It's a 10-member commission. Secretary Gottlieb chairs it, but we have a number of people that we know and know very well on the commission, including Craig Thompson, who used to work for WCA. I think that the commission has done a really good job. They're starting to leak out some of the proposals that'll be in their recommendations. They have to, by March 31st of this year, have a report to the legislature. That report will be out before March 31st. But they have talked about, one of the new taxes that they're talking about is a VMT, the vehicle miles traveled. Some people like that. Some people don't like it. I always remind the more rural the county is, the more it really impacts you because you're driving farther to go to work and for other places. But what they're talking about there is a tax that on an annual basis it's self-reporting, that you would report at the end of the year what your difference in mileage was from the prior year, and then there'd be a tax on that. Whatever, if you drove 15,000 miles, there'd be a tax on that 15,000 miles. And again, it's self-reporting, but at the time, if you would sell your car, let's say 5 years later, you sell your vehicle and those numbers don't match up, then you pay the surcharge on what the actual number is. But that is one of the things that they're talking about the most, vehicle miles traveled. One of the thoughts there is they may exempt the first 3,000 miles annually. There's some talk about a return of gas tax indexing, but from what we're hearing in the Capitol is there's just no appetite for any tax increase whatsoever. Even if there was an increase on tax indexing, the average age of a vehicle on the road today, this is a national average, is 11 years old. And as people are selling their older vehicles and buying newer vehicles, the gas mileage is going up tremendously. The consumption of fuel really isn't going up that great. And even if we did go back to gas indexing, it would not be a long-term sustainable funding mechanism for transportation needs. In the last go-round, there was a general fund transfer of about $35 million. It was a permanent transfer of 0.25% of the general fund taxes. And again, last year, that was about $35 million for the state. They're talking about possibly doing an additional or an increased transfer. They're also talking about there are some sales tax revenues now that are related to parts and repair on vehicles that go to the general fund and don't go to the transportation fund. They're talking about moving that to transportation, but then that creates a hole in the general fund, so that they have to be careful about that. There's been a little bit of talk about tolling in the state of Wisconsin. Speaker Voss has indicated that it's something that he would be open to discussing. But in order for the state of Wisconsin to do tolling, we need to get approval from the federal government, and that's not going to happen within this two-year time frame. So it'll be really interesting to see what comes out on transportation. We have been working very closely with Secretary Gottlieb and with the Wisconsin County Highway Association, and we'll see. There's in Secretary Gottlieb's proposed budget, there's some additional dollars that would go to counties for maintenance of the highway system, which would be extremely important to the counties. Again, the continued property tax controls, we anticipate that they're probably going to remain at zero and zero, but we don't know that. Medicaid, the state GPR spending on Medicaid was increased in the last budget because they had to fill a hole that was created by one-time stimulus dollars. They had anticipated that there'd be about a $500 million shortfall in Medicaid funding, but we actually ended up in the black. And at one point, it was about $40 million. I think it's going to end up even a little bit more than $40 million in the black. And that's good news. But although that shortfall is good news, we know that DHS, in their budget request, has requested an additional $658 million GPR funding to cover Medicaid. And if you remember back to the slide when we talked about what the new revenues would be, that's about half the amount of what new revenues would come in. And then there's no additional money in there yet for any expansion of family care whatsoever. Rainy Day Fund, the legislature now, the past 2 years, they made consecutive deposits to the state Rainy Day Fund. It was $109 million in 2012, which is a very small amount, yet it is something going to the Rainy Day Fund. It does account for less than 1% of the annual spending. The governor and legislative leaders have indicated that they want to put additional appropriations into the Rainy Day Fund. I thought it was interesting that we went back and looked, and we decided we're going to go back to 2008, prior to the recession. There was only one state in the country that had less in their reserve than the state of Wisconsin, and that was the state of Arkansas. And I'm not so certain that we want to be all that proud about that. So where do we go from here? We encourage you to join up with our lobbying team and with the WCA staff. There's the County Ambassador Program that's been going now for several years. There will be another, I think it's January 23rd is the day again, the first one for this year, 2013. We're attempting to get at least one person from every county signed up. It's so important that we have, if we want to go to Senator Schilling or we want to go to someone else and it's from your district, if they hear from you and if we can provide you the information and the ammunition that you need, they're going to listen to you a lot more than they listen to us. So we're really working with our state elected officials, with our county elected officials, and with our county staff so they can carry the message that they need to at the Capitol.
John, if I could interrupt just for a minute. Sure. And there are several supervisors and staff members who are part of the County Ambassadors Program. Would you just indicate, raise your hand if you're part of that? I know Sharon Hampson is, Tom, Dave, Ron is, just so you get a sense. La Crosse County will be well represented.
And we really appreciate that. We think that that is extremely important. It's something that Alice Connors, who's on our board of directors, currently our secretary-treasurer, former president of the association, has done just a tremendous amount of work in the human services area. This is something she started, and we are going to continue that. The state-county outreach effort scores a little bit newer, and there, again, we're working with counties to work with their state-elected officials, have meetings with them on a very regular basis. There's one six-county group that the third Monday of every month they get together and they meet. They invite their legislators. There's another one that meets every other month up in Mosinee. We attend those. We staff those. If there's any time that you have meetings and you have your legislators there and you want us there, we will be there. Somebody from WCA will be there. We encourage you to call and contact your state legislators. Stay current on what's happening. We are going to begin this year for the first time. It's our intent that every Monday morning at 10 o'clock, whoever from the WCA legislative team that's in the office, we're going to go in the conference, and we're going to set up a webinar that you can listen to, and it's basically going to be the most recent updates of what's going on at the Capitol. Most of it is going to be related to county government. It may not all be. It may just be other interesting news that's going on, but it is our intent to do that every morning or every Monday morning at 10 o'clock in the morning. Receive news updates from WisPolitics and the Wheeler Report. If you're not getting the WisPolitics and the Wheeler Report, this is something that, as a dues-paying member of the association, we buy one subscription for the entire state. And as long as the counties are dues-paying members, anyone in that county family, any county elected official, any county employee, you can get either or both the WisPolitics and the Wheeler Report. There's a lot of information. Some people say it's too much information. Read it if you want. Don't, you know, if you don't want. But if you're interested and you're not getting that, please feel free. You can give it to me this evening or contact us anytime at WCA and we'll get you on the list. So with that, comments and questions regarding this, and then before I take questions, we did talk about the legislative exchange, and I think that is really an important a program, too. We've had them for a number of years. They're very well attended. It's much more on an informal basis. We will meet with legislators. We bring legislators in. This year it'll be, I'm trying to think if Senator Schilling is on the program. Senator Schilling and I think Representative Nygren is going to be on the program. We have other cabinet secretaries, other people that come in. WCA staff does a legislative update. We open it up for questions from the floor. It's just a really good program. We would encourage you to attend that. And then finally, before I forgot, I just wanted to talk a little bit about Frexan. And we had a number of conference resolutions last year, and I appreciated your comments earlier this evening. And your chairperson serves on the WCA Frexan Task Force. We've had three meetings so far. We're meeting our fourth time will be on Wednesday this week in Toma. We're doing a lot of work on Frexan, and we will have a report or a best practices manual that will be coming out to the board of directors as soon as we possibly can. We just want to make sure that we do a good job of what we're doing. I think it's been very interesting. I met with some of the industry folks today, and they have indicated to me that they don't believe that they're overregulated in any way, so they're not looking for less regulations. They believe that the DNR is not staffed at a high enough level, and they would support additional resources going to the DNR to make sure that the protections are available. When we had, I'm not sure who from the DNR came to your program, but we had Tom Wolitz. And Tom Wolitz came and spoke to the task force as well, and he told us that the thing that they're concerned about the most, the DNR, is for the people that are not familiar with their realtors or developers, and they're not familiar with Frexand, and what they're doing is they're going around in the areas that they think may have Frexand, and they're digging holes, they're exploring. So there'll be 3-inch in diameter holes, sometimes a couple hundred feet down, that they're testing to see whether or not there's Frexan there, and then they don't fill the holes in. So we all know what happens in those areas if, you know, where they think there might be frac sand and that type of soil, and if those holes aren't filled in. So they have, the DNR has two people that are, that's strictly, that's what they're doing. They're monitoring the people that are going out there and doing that type of digging. So I think we've done a lot of work on frac sand. We've got a ways to go yet, but I appreciate your chair's involvement on the committee, and hopefully we'll have a good product when we come out with that. So with that, I'm open for any questions.
And I don't know if this will come through in questions, but you've given us a lot of information at the risk of spending too much time on this. Can you just name three of the top services that you would identify that WCA provides to member counties? I think, you know, this kind of briefing is really helpful, but I think when we debate $12,000 or $14,000 in dues annually, the question is, what do we get for our money?
Mm-hmm.
So can you just spend a couple minutes
talking about I'll give you an example. Please. I got a phone call today, actually a voice message, and I haven't been able to return it yet. It was a supervisor from a very small county who said, I don't know why I did this, but I volunteered to take on this task. Our county has no ordinances. We have nothing in place, no staff that are taking a look at animal control type issues. He said, so we have no staff. We have no funding. We don't know where to go. We don't know what to start writing. Is there anything that WCA can do? So we can put them in contact with people that we know that have done a very good job in other counties. And I know a couple months ago we met, and Steve, and you were at the meeting, and Terry, you were there as well. We did in July of 2012, we hired a young man who had been a researcher with the Wisconsin Taxpayers Alliance. And one of the things that we're going to do more of is research for counties. And Kyle is a UW-La Crosse grad. He's excellent. So that's another thing that we can provide more research to the counties. We know that Mr. O'Malley has done a lot of research and surveying counties on his own. We're hoping that his time is better suited to doing what he can do here in helping La Crosse County. Not that we don't want you surveying, but if we can do that for you, we think that that makes a lot of sense. We have a lot of questions on insurance type issues, but just so many of the questions that we get are questions that have been answered before, or other counties have done things. And a lot of times it's just putting that individual or that committee in contact with another county that already has done this. So those are the types of things. And I mean, I could go on and on with examples, but those are the types of things.
Let's see what kind of questions we have from supervisors. Supervisor Ebert.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, as one who's been a little unimpressed with some of the Wisconsin Counties Association meetings and stuff, one question, do WCA employees pay their portion of the retirement like the rest of our state people have been asked to do?
WCA is under the Wisconsin State Retirement System. When the statutes, this goes back over 75 years ago, the state legislature allowed the formation of what they called at the time was County Boards Association. It wasn't the County's Association. And we have expanded what we do as an association to not just county elected officials, but to everyone in the county family. So when we were created, the Wisconsin Counties Association or County Boards Association, because they represent a unit of government that is not full-time. County government is not full-time with the exception of Milwaukee County. So it was determined at that time that members of the League of Municipality, the Towns Association, and the Counties Association would be eligible for the Wisconsin State Retirement System. So all of our employees are under the state retirement system, and therefore we are required by law to be treated the same as everybody else, the general employees under the retirement system. So that goes along because we're part of the Wisconsin retirement system. The same thing goes for health insurance.
Okay. Another question: would you be so kind as to, and I assume you don't have it now, but get us the compensation for the executive director and his compensation package? I think that we're paying this, dues and stuff, and I think we have the right to know. And I've tried for 3 or 4 years and have never been able to get a figure.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you a little bit about the process. And there's a different presentation that we do that talks about the organization and structure of the Wisconsin Counties Association. And in that structure is that the executive director of the association is employed by the board of directors. So on an annual basis, it is the executive committee of the board of directors that does the annual review and sets the compensation for the executive director. After that, the executive director is responsible for the salary, the hiring, the firing, the disciplining of all the other employees of the association. And I can tell you my involvement with WCA goes back over 25 years. I don't know what our executive director makes, and I'm telling you, I'm being very honest about it. I have no idea what his compensation is. I have no idea what anybody else at WCA gets paid other than me. And it's something that our board of directors has said that's a decision that they make, and they're not releasing that information. So I don't know what Mr. O'Connell's salary is. I don't know. I mean, I certainly could say that there's been a request from the La Crosse County Board for that information. My guess is that it wouldn't be provided, would not be provided.
So I know that one of the things we do in the groups that we give money to, LADCO and all those, that's one of the things that we've requested and they have provided. So I guess I'm disappointed that for some reason the Counties Association feels that that's not the business of the members.
Well, and again, that's a decision of the Board of Directors. I would say this, that a lot of, and we hear this from legislators all the time, there's ads that we run on a statewide radio program where we get a really good price, and it talks about what we do as county government. And again, I think it's important for our taxpayers to know what county government does for them. But we have been criticized by some legislators, well, why are you using taxpayer dollars to fund those radio programs? If you take a look at the entire WCA budget, only 17% of that is funded by dues. 17% of the total amount. The majority of the funding for the association comes from the management of the insurance companies, the corporate management for the three companies. We have relationships with, for example, AAA, where anyone in the county family, if you buy a membership in AAA and you say that you work for a dues-paying member county, they get a discount. There's some revenue sharing from AAA. There's some revenue sharing with Nationwide Deferred Compensation. There's some revenue sharing with other programs. Not all the programs that we work with, especially through our for-profit arm, which is WCA Services, Inc., they don't all share revenue, but some do. But again, of the total amount of the entire budget for WCA, 17% it comes from dues. So I hope that's helpful.
That it doesn't give me what I want. And then the other thing, and I'm glad to see that you're going to hire a researcher, because I think some of the part that's frustrating, we want to know something, and this county goes out and queries also. We're taking our clerk's time, the clerk's time in another 10 or 12 places, and I look forward to seeing you develop that. And I hope that at one of the WCA convention or something, that'll be developed and you guys can do a presentation on that. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome. And Kyle, who we hired, as I said, he's a graduate of UW-La Crosse. When we were looking, we had another vacancy, and when we filled that spot, we came across Kyle, and I've told Kyle this story. He was a researcher, so he comes in, and you're thinking about him as, well, he could be a good person for this research position. And so we called him back in and talked to him about the research position, and he said, but I really want to lobby. And he has the best personality to do both, to research and lobby. So I'm so pleased that he's on staff, and I think you haven't had the opportunity apparently to hear and see a lot of presentations from us. I think you're going to see a lot of this type of information on a more regular basis coming from WCA because of Kyle or someone just like Kyle, and that only serves us in county government better.
Supervisor Geary.
Madam Chair, is your budget online?
I don't believe that the WCA budget is online.
Okay, send Ray a copy. I don't want one, but and my other question, who's on this executive board?
The executive committee of the board of directors?
Yes.
Those are individuals that at the annual conference are elected by the membership.
There are other county board members, you mean?
Yes.
And how many of them are there?
There's and I'll just go through the current. The current president is Gus Worth. He is a longtime board member from Ozaukee County, former chair. Marty Krieger is the current county board chairman in Sauk County. He serves as the first vice president. The second vice president and was newly elected this year is Supervisor Willie Johnson, who's been on the county board in Milwaukee County for a long time. Our secretary treasurer is Alice Connors, longtime member of the association. And then there's an immediate past president who is Dick Keppen, who is the current and longtime board chair in Waupaca County. So the board of directors, to serve as an officer and be on the executive committee, you have to be a county elected official.
A county board member or?
County board member.
A county board member.
It's a okay. County board member or a county executive. And not the current past president, but the president before the September conference we had here, was Alan Beekel. Alan Beekel is a former county board chair who is now the longest serving county executive. He's from Fond du Lac County. He was the first county executive ever elected to the board of directors.
Okay, thank you.
Supervisor Pedretti.
Does the association have a sustainability plan? I ask that because I've heard it from a lot of people before we started this meeting. This is not sustainable. You hand out those what are the address books at the beginning of the year. They're huge. They're color gloss. I think most people throw them away. I'm just wondering if there is a sustainability plan.
Yeah, we have. Let me talk a little bit about the legislative directories. I thought the same thing when we printed them on the task force, and your chairperson can confirm this. Everything that I do there is all electronically. I haven't done a thing yet, any agenda, minutes, or any of the presentations that we've had. I send them all out electronically as I get them. That county directory is probably in our county officials, our county board supervisors, and county staff, is the most valuable thing that they get from us. They use them on a regular basis. We have talked about doing that electronically, and we have been repeatedly told no, no, no.
By whom?
By our members.
Members.
By our members, that they really like the county directory. Hmm. The other thing is that ads are sold, so none of the dollars to create that document comes from dues.
Mm-hmm. I guess I'm looking at it more in terms of, and maybe that doesn't come from dues, and maybe they could be cutting another area and sponsoring another area, but something like this, it just seems like it's not the good use of resources more than anything for me. We're a sustainable county here in La Crosse, and I know there are other sustainable counties, that when we go to the conferences, there just seems to be a lot of, it doesn't seem to be a plan for trying to do things more sustainable, and I would like to know that maybe there's some start of having a sustainable plan at the association.
And I can tell you, it's, I was going to say this, and it makes make it sound bad for someone who's going to be 57 later this week, but the more younger employees that we have, the more pushed we are to do that, and I see that as a good thing. I really do, and they are pushing us in that area, and I think you will see more of that.
Thank you.
Supervisor Holt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So we're going back, following up on Supervisor Ebert's question, the way you mentioned it, only five people in the whole state know what the executive director makes? Not the entire board, but just the executive committee of the board.
I have never been told that information is shared with the board of directors. On an annual basis, the executive committee does an evaluation, and that committee changes because they can't serve, with the exception of the treasurer, who can't serve more than 4 years. The other individuals, you rotate through a progression of officers, and so they can't serve there forever. Every year, there's different people on there, at least one new person on that committee, and to my knowledge, they are the only ones that know the salary of the executive director.
So in other words, it would take Supervisor Ebert another 20 years in government to get to that spot, probably.
Super. Supervisor Richmond.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't really want to dwell on this either, but, you know, I'm always asking questions about salaries and so on from the city as well as the county, but does that board receive a pension from the state of Wisconsin?
The board of directors?
Yes.
No.
They do not?
No.
But they do, pardon me? The executive director does?
Correct.
Get a pension?
Correct.
That's public record. If they get a WRS pension and they're paying into retirement, that certainly has to be a public record.
You know, I don't know if it's ever officially been requested, but I can tell you, like I said.
I think we need to know that. If you could send that email back to whoever's in charge and get that to us county board people, I think that'd be
good. We can certainly officially communicate to the executive committee that this question has come up, and we expect to have an answer. And I will pursue it out of my office in asking that question.
Well,
and make sure we
share it shouldn't be a big deal. Right. I mean, I don't know why it's been a secret all these years if people have been asking, but, you know, we pay the dues. Thank you.
Anything else? I want to make sure we get to our next agenda item. Other supervisor. Supervisor Meyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll get back to your presentation a little bit on transportation. If you own a hybrid car and you use less gas, is there some move to increase the registration fee on that automobile?
There's been some talk about that. I have personally not sat in on the commission meetings, but other people have. There has been some talk about doing that, yes.
But, I mean, is the WCA involved in it at all?
WCA, as far as the transportation goes, we have several platform positions that would allow us to lobby on anything that increases revenues for the transportation fund, because we know that it's not sustainable at the current levels. So we would certainly have a platform position that would allow us to lobby in support of something like that.
I want you to lobby.
I'm just saying that you know we could. We
okay.
could. Now the having brought up that point is, you know, I think sometimes our membership thinks that the only time that you can make change to a platform position or policy of the association is at the annual conference. And that's not the case. Anything can be brought directly to our board of directors, and the board of directors can take action as well. But I think in the past it's just been, you know, this is the process that we use, and in a letter will go out and say that by such and such a date you have to have the deadline is for conference resolutions, and this is how they're acted upon. But things can go directly to the board of directors, and they can take action, just as the approval and creation of the task force and appointing the members to the FRECSAN task force. So you don't always have to wait until the annual conference. If there's something that you believe in very strongly, bring it to the attention of one of your representatives. Doesn't even have to be from your district. Bring it to the attention of one of the board members, and if he or she is willing to put that forth, we certainly can discuss it at the board.
Okay, we've done what's been asked of us. We bought something that's going to help save gas, cut it down, but now we could get charged back for it. So just wondering.
One of the things that we're hearing, too, is that there more than likely there will be an increase in the vehicle registration fee.
Across the board, you mean?
Across the board, there's been some discussion that they would do it on the value of
like Minnesota
of the automobile. There's been a number of states that have done that already. They have a simple form that at the end of the year, when you do your taxes, you say, in my case, I've got a 2010 Chrysler Town and Country van. It doesn't matter how many miles or anything else. It's a very basic form. This is what it'll be, and this is what you pay. And the older that vehicle gets, then the annual amount that you would pay would decrease.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Supervisor Burns. Pass. Anybody else? Thank you, John, very much
You're
for
welcome.
Making the trip up here. We know you know your way to La Crosse because you've been here quite a bit, but we appreciate your making the effort. And I would ask to follow up on Supervisor Ebert's question from earlier, that perhaps the next time we hear from WCA in a presentation like this, that there is more of a conversation about the separate entities and the finances of the organization itself. I think that would be especially helpful to us.
And that's And we could do that anytime if you wanted us to do. And we always do that at the district meetings. But I've got a presentation that in 5 minutes I could have it ready to go and update it for here. So you tell me when you want us up here, and we'll be happy to do it.
Okay, thank you. Oh, Supervisor Veenstra.
Well, if it takes 5 minutes, maybe you could just email it to Steve, and he could just provide it to us. And if we have questions, we can follow up. No need to drive up here.
And we can do that, but don't feel bad about having us come up here. I think it's one of the most important things that we do. But if you go to the WCA website and then you see the link for WCASI or WCA Services, Inc., that is our for-profit arm. And we work very closely there. It's not only with county government. It's with all local units of government. And our philosophy there is that anything that we can do to make you be more efficient or to make, you know, in any way that we can make you do your jobs better and serve the taxpayers better. It doesn't matter if we get revenue sharing or not from them. That's how we can help you. And if you have ideas, if you look at that list, you say, well, this is really good, but I wish that they would offer this type of service, let us know, and if we can find something, we will add it to the list. Thank you so much again.
Thank you very much. Travel safely back.
Thank you.
Oh, my gosh. John was not expecting that, I can guarantee you. Thanks.
I've never gotten applause for my presentation, so we can, except for Gary. That's it. And when I stop, yeah. Oh. Okay. Without any further ado, we have a very interesting presentation that Brian Fukuda and I were able to learn more about. And if you don't know, Jeff Schrader serves on our is our local representative on the Airport Commission, and of course, obviously, is located in Jeff's district. And I think it's an important, vital part of our local economy. And if you've never had the opportunity to fly out of La Crosse, it's one of the most comfortable ways to fly out of anywhere. Without any further ado, Clinton. Oh, I'm sorry, Andrea. Did you want to do a little bit of introduction?
I cover the first district for the city of La Crosse.
Thank you.
But it's on French Island.
Okay. Well,
they're fighting over you. Yeah.
Well, anyway, this was the result of Jeff putting more encouragement on me. I didn't mean to any slight to Andrea, but Clinton is our new airport manager, and he's going to give you some helpful information on the economic impact of the airport. Clinton, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. O'Malley, for inviting me and for the board to give me an opportunity to present. My slideshow is going to be pretty short, so I'll leave some room for questions. Yep. Sure, everybody's hungry. Let's see here. All right, what I'm going to go over is just a little basic information on the State Bureau of Aeronautics does an economic impact study for us every 5 years. We recently had a new study come out here a couple months ago that is available on our website, lscairport.com, if anybody's interested in downloading that at a later time. So who does the airport serve? We don't serve just the residents of the city of La Crosse, even though we are owned by the city. We have an approximate service area of over 250,000 people within a 60-mile drive radius of the airport premises. Some of the services that we provide are obviously airline transportation, corporate travel. We have Ashley Furniture and several other businesses who base their aircraft out at the airport. Obviously, your personal leisure flyer and cargo. So if you want fresh lobster at Red Lobster, it probably came in through the airport. I don't know if theirs is that fresh, but... there are about 500 commercial airports in the United States. We currently rank 219th busiest in the country, so just a little over the halfway mark. Here's some brief summary of the local economic impact that the airport provides to this is actually provided to La Crosse County, is how the state does the report. So as you can see, that we had a local employment impact of 320 jobs with a payroll of slightly over $16 million and economic output sales of $31.9 million. So that's obviously using the economic multiplier that the economists use when they calculate these studies. And as far as the state goes, the airport provides over $38 million in economic impact to the state of Wisconsin. This number is not fully inclusive. The airport also receives slightly over $1.7 million a year in federal and locally generated funds that we use for projects, which are not factored into this economic study. We just recently completed about a $17 million taxiway expansion, which obviously provided additional economic impact to the local economy. Talk a little bit about our business. This is from a recent study that we did relative to our air service. This is a distribution of where passengers are coming in and out of La Crosse from around the country and the world. You see London's on there as our top international destination. So it's kind of interesting to see where people are going and coming from through the La Crosse Airport. Obviously, the La Crosse Airport is heavily weighted towards business and military travel, which you can see some of the major business destinations included in there. So we do have a couple of challenges moving forward, as all airports do. This graph right here, or this map, shows our leakage. So we generate, as an airport, approximately 585 passengers per day each way. So a total of 1,000 passengers inbound and outbound. We are retaining about 42% of those travelers, which equates to about 246 passengers each way. So that means that every day, approximately 300 people get in their car and drive to the Minneapolis airport. So obviously that's, you know, economic impact that we're leaking, which is an issue. So what's creating these challenges? I don't have it up here, but the real big challenge is fuel cost. As soon as oil gets over $80 a barrel, the regional jet model doesn't work like it used to. And obviously, being a regional airport, that's what we're served by, is regional jets. So in order to earn additional revenue, airlines have been reducing capacity, which, of course, reduces supply and brings up the price of tickets. Delta has recently announced the elimination of 50 passenger jets, which is their mainstay here at the La Crosse Airport. They have announced purchases of 76 passenger jets, and they're also acquiring some 100 passenger jets from other airlines. So we will see larger dual-service jets, which is nice, but there's also the question as to what's that going to do to the number of frequencies that we have. In order to reduce leakage, there's a couple things we need to do in terms of marketing and ensuring that the local population knows about the airport and understands the importance of the airport to the local economy. And then on the airport side, obviously going out and trying to find additional airline service. Now as the airlines merge, it's getting more difficult to find any other airlines because they're all merging. This is a graph showing our employment trends from 1995 to 2011. I put a big slash right through there showing the Northwest Delta merger and the beginning of the recession. So you can see the significant decrease in passengers because of those two events. Obviously, with Northwest Airlines, we did have mainline DC-9 service, which went away shortly after the Delta merger. We did gain the Detroit flight, which has been wonderful, but the Delta has also been playing around with seasonalizing that flight as well. So what are we doing about it? A couple initiatives that we're working on pretty hard here over the last couple months. We're working with both the La Crosse and the Winona Chamber to reach out to the business partners in the region, the major corporations. We're also working on creating an air service coalition, which we will then utilize to try to enhance air service. We're also pursuing some marketing initiatives, a new website, working with them, implementing a marketing program, again, to educate the consumer on the benefits of using the local airport. That being said, we'll never be the cheapest airport in town. Regional airports just won't. It's our service and the convenience that we can provide to our customers. It's really our mainstay. And then as far as our service development, analyzing market trends, and then we are also looking at a small community air service development grant, which is a grant that's funded by the Department of Transportation for smaller communities to enhance their service. With that, I would be happy to answer any questions that the board may have.
Unfortunately, Mr. Hokumer is still in the room, so I can't make a comment about your brevity and how much we appreciate that. But if he were not in the room, I would have said something. Any questions from supervisors? Supervisor Geary.
Yes, you mentioned 500 and some airports nationwide. How many of them are city airports?
You know, I couldn't tell you that on a national basis. I can tell you in Wisconsin, of all the airport commercial service airports, La Crosse is the only city-owned commercial airport. Now, that does vary from state to state. I was recently up in North Dakota. There, most of the airports are authorities, so they're actually independent forms of government that are run by board of directors.
Supervisor Veenstra.
I was curious, what's the total acreage of our airport?
We have approximately 1,400 acres.
One of the most frustrating things about flying out of our airport is how crappy the taxi services are in the city of La Crosse and its area. And one of the things that would be really beneficial is if somehow the airport could coordinate with some taxi service so that there was regular appearances. I've waited over an hour. I could have driven to Minneapolis almost in the time it took to get a taxi for a one-way trip to the north side of La Crosse. If there could be some work with the taxi services or perhaps with the city to do some, maybe some regulation about how the taxis are providing service out there, I think it would be really beneficial to people trying to use your service.
Okay. Noted. Thank you.
Supervisor Ferries.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You touched on it, but whose responsibility is it to seek out like an additional a third airline into the cities? I think Midwest was the most recent that moved out. Yeah. Who's responsible?
In the last 10 years, there's been a fundamental change in how airports are run. It used to be that, and just as soon as 5 years ago, if an airport provided enough revenue, an airline would catch wind of that, and if it made sense to them, they would commence service. It's flipped 180 degrees. Now it's up to the airport to actually pursue that service. We have to hire the consultants to show the airline that it does make economic sense. And then many times we have to come up with incentives and guarantees in order to acquire that service. So it's unfortunate that it's come to that, but that's the way that the market works now.
Supervisor Cruz.
I have to admit that I am a leaker. I often tend, you know, to follow the cheapest flight prices, but occasionally it's cheaper to fly out of La Crosse than other places. Is that something that the large airlines, sort of a bone they throw you, or how does that happen? Apparently, I thought maybe you had something to do with that, maybe the marketing, but how does that happen, and, you know, how can you make that happen more often?
Well, the only influence that the airport can have on airline pricing is to actually bring in more competition. That's the only tool we have. The airlines set their own prices. We consider airline pricing a voodoo science rather than a regular science. I don't think anybody quite understands it. But when we do find, matter of fact, I just booked a ticket for the summer that it was actually cheaper than out of a competing airport on the same flight that was connecting through. So a lot of it has to do with timing. There's so many seats that are sold on an aircraft for a discount rate. Once those seats are gone, the rate goes up. It goes so far in depth that even if you're looking on the website at a ticket, it might create a higher price for me looking at it at 1 second later just because you've now created demand for that seat. Another thing for people to consider, too, is the reason we'll never have the same pricing as Minneapolis is because that airline is bringing another aircraft from Minneapolis or Chicago or Detroit to La Crosse. They have to have employees in La Crosse. They have to buy fuel to feed that flight, and they have to pay rent to the airport to maintain the facility. So there's a lot of cost that goes into flying into regional airports. So it's really the service, the time savings, and for the airlines, the business travelers, the most lucrative passenger. Now, there are things that we can do in terms of of leisure travel by bringing in low-cost carriers, you know, your Legions of the World, Frontiers, which we are actively pursuing as well.
Supervisor Burns.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Speaking of revenues, what are your top three sources of revenue? I'm assuming it's rents or royalties paid to the airport from the airlines?
Sure. I can do the rent order. Airline, parking, car rentals.
What was the third one?
Car rentals. Car rental.
Oh, car rentals. I'm sorry. Thank you. So you have rents from the car rental companies for their offices in the airport?
Correct. And we also take a percentage of gross on all of those as well. We own the parking and hire a contractor to manage the lot for us, and then they get a small cut of our profits.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions? Supervisor Weers.
Thank you. Along Supervisor Veenstra's question, are you on the bus route? I guess I'm not sure.
Yes, it is.
Okay. So that would, if the taxis weren't willing to do something, that's a good marketing tool, I guess, to use in conjunction with that.
Supervisor Veenstra is not allowed on the public buses, so that's why he needs a taxi. Sorry, Jeff. Mr. O'Malley, did you have a question?
Clinton, you shared a really detailed report with Brian and I. You said that was on your website. Provides a lot more information. Very impressed with a whole lot more detail for anybody that's interested in seeing a lot more of the analysis that's on. But that is on your website?
The full economic analysis, the economic impact statement's on the website. The consulting survey is not on the website, but I would be happy to share that with any of the county members. If you just want to send me an email, I can email it to you.
If you forward it to me, I can forward it to the board, and that's more sustainable. Then they can print it out if they want to. Or
yeah, actually, I have one printed copy. So
yeah, good.
That's a very sustainable practice. Thank you. Any other questions from supervisors or comments? Supervisor Schrader.
My question is of Supervisor Weers. What was your question? I didn't hear it.
It was if he is, or if the airport is directly on the bus route.
Any other questions? All right. Thank you very much for being here this evening and sharing that important information. Anything else from you, Mr. O'Malley? Oh, yes. Thank you. Any suggestions for future agenda items, either for a planning meeting or for a committee? I'm assuming that Supervisor Friedland's ordinance rewrite on travel policies is going forward to executive committee. Any other future agenda items? If not, I would love to entertain a motion to adjourn by Supervisor Cruz, seconded by Supervisor Landry. All those in favor of adjournment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? We are adjourned with the thanks of the chair.